Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on another beautiful Saturday morning in Saratoga, live from our Clare Court location. Fun show scheduled for this morning, and a few will be joined by jockey Dylan Davis. Had a nice win yesterday, and Jack Knowlton's Tapple Cider for Saratoga Stable won the stake to De La Rose the other day on our flash drive. We'll talk about that and much more with Dylan. A little bit later on, Bill Nader will join us. Hong Kong Jockey Club, of course, he was here at NYRA for quite a while as well. He's moving on to the Thoroughbred Owners of California at the end of this year, so we'll talk about that and much, much more. But top of the show, very happy to be joined by Tom Rooney, President and CEO of the NTRA, National Thoroughbred Racing Association. Tom, good morning.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on board. And let's start out by just talking a little bit about your background. First of all, as I was reading your bio information, fellow SU alum. I'm a graduate myself. You played a little football at SU?
I did. I didn't graduate from Syracuse, but I played my freshman year there and kind of got my butt kicked, sufficiently enough that I went to Division III school after that. But I played for Coach McPherson, who was, one of my all-time favorite coaches. And it was a great experience, just a little bit over my head, talent-wise.
I had played high school football with a guy who outsized everybody, and he got recruited by Notre Dame, and it was the same kind of thing where he was bigger than everybody in high school, but when he got to Notre Dame, he realized, oh, okay, it's a little bit different in the grade one world.
Yeah, it wasn't so much the size as much the speed. It's the speed at Division I is a different level, so I tell my kids, play high school football, and if you don't want to play college, it's fine, but it was a great experience.
Went on, served in the military. You were in Congress in Washington. And now how long have you been at the NTRA?
Not even a year yet. I'm coming up on my first year, and it's been a whirlwind going all over the country to a lot of tracks, a lot of grade one events, tried to get to as many of the Derby prep races as I could. We have our Handicappers Championship in Vegas. We have our Eclipse Awards. This past year we had it out at Santa Anita. This year we're having it down in Florida. So, I just went to the Haskell. Obviously we'll be here for the Travers and going to the Pennsylvania Derby. So I'm trying to meet as many people in the industry as I can. As you know, there's a lot of different fiefdoms in horse racing. So I'm trying to at least get in front of everybody to introduce myself at the beginning, and then having a little bit more comfort to work with them as we move forward after that is kind of my goal right now.
Yeah, and I was looking at your Twitter feed last night, and I saw you had a little meeting updating people over at Facing Tipton the other day, and I assume you're in town also for the roundtable tomorrow
and
whatnot.
Yeah, I'll be speaking at the roundtable.
But they say Congress, the military, SU, a little football, but you have a horse racing background with the Rooney family, so relate that a little bit.
Yeah, so my grandfather, is well known for his football history with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but what a lot of people don't know is it was horse racing and his handicapping ability, especially here at Saratoga, that enabled him to get the money he needed to start the team. He literally came up here on a week-long trip, and apparently the rumor is won so much money that he got a police escort back to the Pennsylvania border because he had so much cash in his car and was able to, his brother had like a club football team back in Pittsburgh. He changed that over, and when the laws changed in Pennsylvania to allow pro football, he changed the name to the Steelers, or to the Pirates, which became the Steelers some years later. But, you know, if it wasn't for his handicapping ability, you know, there would be no Roonies and Steelers, and I probably wouldn't be here right now. But, you know, he also owns several racetracks. For a long time, the Pittsburgh Steelers were not a very good team. And so it was, you know, the racetracks that he owned and his handicapping ability helped him make payroll. And so we own Yonkers Racetrack in New York, Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, Green Mountain Racetrack in Vermont, not too far from here. But, you know, so, and then we had a stallion farm in Maryland called Shamrock. So horse racing's been in our family since way before I was born. And now I have a few claimers out there myself. I don't know. Hopefully someday I'll be able to come up and race at Saratoga, but I'm not at that level yet.
I did appreciate you had a little selfie over at the museum with the Shamrock Silks behind you on one of the jockey statues.
That was great. Awesome. Yeah. What a nice surprise that was to see. I recognized the Silks, but, you know, it's sort of a common, you know, the green Shamrock, and then it said Shamrock Farm. I'm like, wow, that's our Silks. So that was pretty cool.
That is great. And I also saw you tweeted out, I had missed the article, so I appreciate you tweeted it out. Just from the last month or so, T.D. Thornton did a nice kind of Memories of Green Mountain. And I think a lot of people in this area remember Green Mountain because it was before my time, but I guess Sundays they'd be closed here, and so everybody would head up to Green Mountain for the Sunday racing.
Green Mountain was this really cool racetrack in the middle of the mountains. A lot of people from Albany went over, you know, and then off-track betting, you know, made it a little bit more difficult when it came to New York. So, but I, you know, one year I worked at Green Mountain when I was in high school or college, and we were the only track, I think, in the country that had greyhounds, harness, and thoroughbreds in the same season, same year.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I knew all three.
Yeah, so I was a lead out with the dogs. You know, I was one of those kids that put the dogs in the box and then chased them after, but we had harness and thoroughbred all in the same year one year. It was that has to be, you'll never see that again.
Yeah. And as I say, I have memories of Green Mountain, people talking about it here with the Sundays and heading up there. Talk a little bit about NTRA, which I think it has evolved over the years, and I think the mission has maybe changed a little bit. So talk about what the mission is for NTRA.
The mission has changed, but I think it's probably relevant for our industry now with the passage of HISA, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act at the federal level. You know, all the things that horse racing enjoys with the tax depreciation and things that are percolating more towards the federal level, especially with HISA, it's going to be even more. So our board decided that hiring a former congressman to go back to Washington to represent the industry at the federal level. It might be a couple things now, but in the next 5 to 10 years, it could be more and more as we, you know, travel over state lines and, you know, these horses go from New York to wherever they're going to go next. You know, it is something that as I've gotten to meet people, I met a famous trainer down at Payson Park in Indiantown, Florida, and I asked him, you know, what do you want me to do? He's just like, I just want it to be fair wherever I go from state to state. I don't want to run into some buzzsaw, you know, some place where it's, you know, anything goes. And so I just want to know that it's going to be fair. And I think that that's what HISA is going to give us, at least the baseline level playing field that handicappers, owners, trainers, horses can enjoy a certain level that gives us a little bit better of a reputation and I think, you know, preserves horse racing for the next generation. That's my goal is, you know, I grew up with this stuff. I certainly want to do everything that I can to make sure that, you know, our children and our grandchildren are able to come to Saratoga like this and enjoy, you know, a couple weeks in August or wherever, you know, going to the Derby or what have you. So, you know, HISA's, or The NTRA's mission is definitely to assist HISA in getting over the finish line in January, getting it implemented, then working with the new Congress on the new tax bill, a new farm bill, which is going to be important for things like immigration, backstretch workers, farm workers at our breeding farms and the like. So we've got a lot to do. We still do our other things, and I think we do them very well. The Handicappers Championship out in Vegas, the Eclipse Awards. We have, you know, our Alliance program, which offers benefits to our members. But we're a true trade association, and we're one, I think, that's going to be about as close to a league office as you can get. And, you know, partnering with HISA, I think that racing's better off.
Yeah, I had Lisa Lazarus in here yesterday from HISA, and she was kind of
talking about the implementation,
and she was saying a lot of the same things, that they're now an organization that people can look towards to answer for the industry. When there's things, news that comes out, the industry was a little more, you know, spotty here and there as to where the answers would come from. So now HISA as an organization, the NTRA being national, and I think getting a person like you who's familiar with Washington as a former congressman, and you've opened an office in Washington too, correct?
We have. It's only been open a couple months, but it's very exciting. I've got, you know, a staffer that used to work for me when I was in Congress, then went on to work for a cabinet secretary. I got her back, and I got another young man who's a in-house lobbyist. So, you know, I've already went to about 15 to 20 different members' office to reconnect with my friends. And one of the things I'm doing strategically is trying to figure out who's going to be the leaders of the committees that affect horse racing, and trying to make sure that they understand what I'm doing now. And then when I come back to them, when I need something, they know who I'm representing. So, you know, we've tried to lay that groundwork. I'm going to meet with Representative Tonko a little bit later. I was a Republican, he's a Democrat, so it's not a partisan thing. It's who helps.
Well, I think HISA was always kind of bipartisan, because Mitch McConnell, Tonko was very much involved.
Right, it's who helps horse racing. That's who we're interested in.
And we showed the website address a few minutes ago, the NTRA website. You had a nice article on there just recently talking about some of the myths of HISA. And kind of answering those, did a great job doing that. And again, I would tell people to go take a look at the article. But we're now, again, about 5 or 6 weeks into the implementation of HISA. I asked Lisa yesterday, and she kind of gave her thoughts on implementation. I had Joe Applebaum from the New York Thoroughbred Horseman in here the other day. He said he thought here in New York it was going very well, because a lot of the things that HISA is trying to do had already been kind of underway in New York.
Yeah.
So for New York, it's been okay. From the NTRA aspect, how do you think HISA is going so far? You know, a month and a half in.
Anything where you have a big change like this, there's going to be anxiety. There's going to be growing pains. When you go from state or regional levels, in the Mid-Atlantic, where I, by and large, race, we had a lot of safety measures in place that we like to think that HISA adopted.
Yeah.
And the same thing with NYRA and you know, other places as well. But you know, I think that it's going very well. I think that Lisa has been extremely empathetic to people's concerns, like with the horseshoe issue. It's not just like, well, it's my way or the highway. Like when groups come together and say, hey, this is going to be a real problem for us, it is still a work in progress as far as what the end goal is going to be. And I think she's very open-minded, and I think that she understands what people's concerns are. Now, there are myths where people are saying stuff that is completely not true, and those are some of the things that I tried to address in that myths versus facts article. But where there is wiggle room, and where there is something that, you know, she can work with horsemen or whoever to get a better product by the end of the year, that's what she's doing right now. So, you know, I feel very good about it, but don't get me wrong. Whenever the federal government takes over something that had usually been handled by the states, there is, in this country, we're more about local governance more than anything. So I get it. There's going to be anxiety. There's going to be growing pains. But I think that our sport, which is a national sport and deserves national uniform standards, will be better off in the end.
Yeah, and I'm rooting for you guys, and I'm rooting for Heise because, as you know, horse racing media, but people in the industry as well, have been saying for years, we need uniformity in the country. And you alluded to it earlier when you talked to the trainer. Every jurisdiction had their own rules, and it just made it difficult for the horse people and the fans as well. So I think the uniformity is a great thing moving forward. I think having you on board as a former Washington person in the Washington office, that'll all be beneficial. You mentioned it a couple of times already, and I'm assuming you were there this year because I think you were already on board National Handicapping Championship, and you know, we're talking Heise and whatnot, which affects the racetracks and the horse people and the authorities at the various racetracks. But the horse players are an important part of the game. And National Handicapping Championship here at OTB, we've been out and covered it a few years. I want to go out as a player, and I'd love to know your feelings being out there, because I think it's like the Horse Players Convention. I think it's a great event.
I was blown away when I walked in that room the first time. I literally had just started this job, and I did not know what to expect when we went out to Vegas. And when I walked in that room and saw just the magnitude of the production, and how many people were in there, and the thing that impressed me the most was the fellowship of the people at the different tables and how they come together once a year, and it's just sort of like a family reunion. But I mean, you know, like I alluded to earlier with my grandfather, I mean, I come from a family of successful handicappers. I'm not very good, but you know, I do appreciate and I do respect people that know how to play the horses at that level, which is, you know, that's the highest level. And so we want to celebrate that. We want it to sort of be like the World Series of Poker, where, you know, it gets more TV traction in the future, and we're trying to figure out ways to make it, you know, more exciting for television viewers or whatnot. But we also don't want to upset the apple cart of what people are used to. You know, so there's a fine line that you got to walk. When you make changes, sometimes people are like, oh, that's going to ruin everything. So you got to be careful. But I want people to see it. Like, I'd never seen it before. And then when I walked in there, I'm like, there's too many people in this room participating in a sport, and nobody outside this room knows what's going on. It should be on SportsCenter, or it should be on some kind of, you know, viewable access that people get to participate, or at least see who the champion is or the final table or whatever. But it is very exciting.
Yeah, we had a great time the couple of years we were out covering it. We had a great time because there's obviously a lot of good players up here, and they make the NHC, and so we were able to interview some local people while we were out there. And my colleague, when I'm in here on Sunday mornings, my co-host is Steve Bick, and he goes out and does the radio show. And the first year he did it, I said, radio for a handicapping contest? And it like knocks it out of the park. Once you start listening, it's just infectious. He brings the players on. We had so far this year sitting here this year had Chris Harrison, who won, AJ Benton, who finished third this year. I had him in the other day. We had the Matisse brothers in. Paul Matisse, of course, has won in previous years. So it's always fun to talk to the guys who go out there. And as I say, I'd love to go out as a player sometime. And I will also tout, while we're here, first I'll tout Keith Chamblin and Holly Short do a great job putting together the event, because it is a fabulous event. Keith's right here this morning. But also want to tout my colleague, I mentioned Steve Bick, the Beat Bick contest. You got to go to the NTRA website and try to beat Bick, because Bick himself has touted it quite a bit already, but deservedly so. If you manage to win the Beat Bick competition, you head to Vegas with a chance at $1 million.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, we appreciate the partnership with Steve. So it'll adding more excitement to that week. So
yeah, and as I say, you guys do a great job. I just wanted to hit on a couple other things that maybe aren't necessarily horse racing related, but I saw on your Twitter feed. First of all, I was scrolling down. I'd never heard of this book, and I looked it up, and it was published maybe 4 or 5 years ago. The Perfect Horse.
Yeah.
Referring to kind of the Nazis and Americans during World War II, kind of vying over some horses. I got to pick that up.
It's a unbelievable sort of sub-story of World War II, how there are these perfect, beautiful, there was thoroughbreds, you know, some of them were Hitler's horses, race horses. There was Lippensanders that came from Poland. And it was this effort by Germans, Polish, and then eventually Americans to try to insulate these horses. And they were moving them all around battles and stuff to stay out of the way. And people were sort of meeting behind the scenes, like, you know, when they're talking about concentration camps down the road and that kind of thing. They had these horses where, you know, they were trying to figure out how to get them to safety and then eventually get them on a boat and get them to Virginia, and then what happened to them then. But I mean, it's all about George Patton's love for horses, the end of the cavalry in American warfare, and really warfare generally, and then a bunch of German soldiers and how they went about looking after these horses. But it is one of those, you got to love a horse to understand what these people were. Literally, people were dying for these horses to protect them.
No,
so
it sounded the perfect horse, and it sounded like and it sounded like maybe movie potential too. It's
absolutely, absolutely.
Like, and one other thing that I saw on your Twitter feed, and I just you put a couple of pictures up, looked like a family vacation, Yosemite. I'd love to get out there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we pulled up to Yosemite, the South Gate, and there was helicopters going over, and then we saw some fire trucks, and the woman, like the ranger at the gate, she's like, I guess we're still letting people in, and we didn't really know what was going on, and we went up, and we were staying up, you know, where El Capitan is, all the attraction stuff at the lodge there, and apparently, like, right after that, they closed that South Gate. They had this huge forest fire out there. So we got lucky. Unfortunately, that they have to deal with these forest fires every year. But those trees at Yosemite and Sequoia, I mean, you can't even imagine how big, I forget what the Sequoia trees are. So we've tried to, when my kids were growing up, we tried to, when I was in Congress, go to as many national parks as we could. We rent one of those Cruise America campers and drive all around, you know, Yellowstone and the Grand Canyon and up Zion, Bryce, everywhere we can, just to expose them to this country's beauties. And I got two sons in college now, and they don't have girlfriends yet, so I'm like, this might be our last chance to hit one more. So we never went to Yosemite, and so we packed them all up. No more campers. We're staying in hotels now. But it was fun. It was good times.
Yeah, the national park system. Yeah. Yosemite. I'd always love to head out there. So it was fun to see the pictures. Tom, appreciate the visit. And again, you guys are doing good work. And as I say, the focus seems to have shifted the mission a little bit to NTRA. But I think you're now in a good spot to advocate for the industry down in Washington and whatnot. Yeah. And we appreciate you doing that, not just on behalf of the industry, but the horse players as well. You know, the tax reduction, which was an anachronism, the old tax rules that got put to the sideline. That was great for horse players. So appreciate all the work you and the NTRA are doing, and good luck going forward.
Yeah, I will just say one more thing with what you said with our mission. I have seen a lot of, you know, duplicative things in horse racing, and one of the things I like about where the NTRA is going is we're the only game in town when it comes to what we're doing. So we're singularly focused on Washington and making sure that the politicians there know what we need.
Yeah, and it's great. I think it is great for the industry to have a group advocating in Washington.
So yeah.
Appreciate the effort you and everybody does. And as I say, appreciate it, and good luck going forward. And everybody on the show on Saturdays, gift card. So gift card to Pinnell's. Go over. It's right around the corner here. I will tout the lasagna, although people like the steak too.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Tom Brody, President and CEO of the NTRA. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more Racing Across America after this. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Scott Varley, and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection of one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised a little earlier, we're joined now by jockey Dylan Davis. Dylan, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Happy to have you on board. Talk a little bit about the recent days and the last, 8 months or so that have been absolutely fabulous for you. But why don't we take a look right now and just kind of kick off and reminisce about yesterday. Nice win for Sacatoga, Jack Nolson, Barkley Tag on Tappelsider. You're going to get up by a neck here on Tappelsider, the number five horse. Talk about this ride, and I will say I ran into somebody a little later in the day. I said, Dylan's going to be on with me tomorrow. I said, tell him that was a great ride. So reflect a little bit on the victory with Tappelsider.
Sure, Tappelsider, nice filly. We're coming back down to claiming 40. But the previous trip earlier in the meet, I took the inside route and ended up getting stopped. Sometimes trainers like that, where you want to save all the ground, and if you can't get through, then you unfortunately have to take it. But yesterday, when I rode her, she saved all the ground again, both turns, but I had an opportunity to get out. I saw Javier. I knew he was trying to come up the inside again, and so I had to make my move towards the outside, try to get my momentum going, and once she got in the clear, she was able to run him down, which was very nice.
Talk about turf runners, because you do want to save ground, but how much of it is you, how much of it is instructions from the trainer deciding whether you're going to save ground, whereas you say can leave you in a little jam up as you turn from home if things don't open up, and how much is the trainer saying, you know, save the ground, or it's up to you to decide in the race?
So with turf races, you want to save as much ground as possible, but you don't want to go out of your way. If you're going out of your way, you're going to take the horse off stride, and you might lose a spot where you want to be. You definitely want him to be comfortable, but the trainers, they don't give me too many instructions as of now, but they know I try my best, and saving ground is key on the turf.
Yeah.
And then after that, you're just trying to find a right free running trip, whether it's saving ground or trying to come out, but after that, you're just trying to try to ride the flow of the race.
Up here, what's the difference from you, from a jockey perspective, inner turf course to the outer turf course?
With the inner turf course, it's a short stretch run, so you definitely want to get early position. It's very tough to make up a lot of ground if you're too far out of it, even if you're going fast. So definitely want to get that early position going into that first turn. And and then we're talking about the mellow in the outer. You can have a nice quieter trip or an easier trip. Let your horse get some rhythm. It's okay to be last, but I would prefer to be coming towards the back of the pack on the melon course.
Interesting. Yeah. And the inner turf course, you know, one of the shorter distance races, two turn races, outside post, as a handicapper, I think the outside post position probably not advantageous.
Oh, it's very difficult, especially with the rail out. You got that out, the crown of the turf course. You have to, it's a little dangerous at times.
Oh, I never thought about that. Once the turf course comes itself.
Yeah, right on the outside, it kind of drops down into the outside rail. you're just trying to do your best you can to get in. A lot of everyone wants to fold in, so you're just hoping that your horse can take the first turn and you don't get in any trouble.
I never thought about that. The turf course itself does have that crown, and so when the rail gets moved, the crown is in a different.
It gets dangerous.
Have you ridden on the out of the chute yet? What are your opinions there?
I have actually. My father Robbie Davis was riding it, and they said that they had difficulties. That's why they took it out. But when they brought it back, I wasn't too fond of it just by listening to my father. But they do the best that they can. They limit the amount of runners, and they put us to the outside rail. They give us as much room as possible. They give us a little temporary rail across the chute. And so I found that being on the outside post position, my horse gets a little lost. You do have to use your horse a lot more to try to get that position. Even if you're an early runner, you have to use a lot more to clear. And then being on the inside, you got to make sure you break well enough to be able to get that position. If you don't break well, you're going to find yourself next to last fairly quickly.
It's been interesting. As a handicapper, it's been a little bit interesting. I think it's a fun addition, and it adds a little extra, you know, piece to the handicapping puzzle, but we're still kind of feeling it. We're all kind of feeling it out a little bit. I wanted to go back and watch another victory you had just the other day, because this was a nice stakes victory. We're going to look at Our Flash Drive. Goes out for Mark Cassie and Live Oak Plantation. Our Flash Drive going to be the number six horse here. This was last week's Della Rose. Talk a little bit about this ride and this victory on the turf course.
Oh, she's a very nice filly. When I went into the paddock with Mark, He didn't give me any instructions. He just said, just ride her like she's the best filly. We were trying to figure out. I gave him my thoughts. I thought that she needed a little bit of a tracker or stalk, like a target to look at. And when I came into there, I thought she was going to be laying second or third, at the most fourth, maybe tucked in. I found myself laying third, three wide, and I had enough horse, and she really responded for me down the stretch, which was really nice. I saw a couple guys had a little trouble tripping in behind, trying to split some horses, but she had a perfect trip, and she ran well that day.
And I see you have ridden her before, so a little familiarity. Talk about, as a jockey, how it works with a horse like that, which you've ridden before and you have a little familiarity, as compared to horses you jump on for the first time.
Sure, yeah. So when you're riding a horse more than once, you definitely have a good feel of what you need from them. So whether, you know, how they handle the bridle in their mouth, or do they respond quickly when you ask them, how long does it take for them to get their run going? Do they respond with the stick? Do they not respond? Flagging. There's multiple things that you'll know a lot of once you ride. But if you ride for the first time, you have to go off the trainer's word, replays, and do the best that you can. Really, you know, it's, I say like a test ride, but you're getting your first feel of the horse. So it's a big deal to get multiple rides on one horse.
How much goes into homework you have to do? I mean, any race, whether you've been on or not, but particularly a horse maybe the first time, looking at the PPs, but as you say, you look at replays too.
It really depends on the rider, the jock. You could spend hours on one race if you want to, workouts, everything. But for me, I watch replays on my horse. If I have a little more, I don't know how you'd say it, a little more questions to ask, I'll watch more replays. But first off, I look at if the horse has won and see how they've won, watch that replay, watch their very last start, and just trying to get a good idea about how this horse has run. I have some questions to ask the trainer and see if they like particular things, and then they'll go off of that. And then after that, trying to see how the race unfolds. The first thing is looking at the speed. How fast is the race going to be? And then second off is, where's the best position for my horse to be for their best run possible? And then after that, then everything kind of folds in together.
And talk a little bit about how experience has helped you throughout the years. Also in the New York colony, being with rider, you know, the level of rider that you have here, and kind of watching those kind of riders, just talk about over the years how you've improved and benefited from that.
Of course, it's just being able to ride here and ride with the best riders is great. As the years are going and I'm winning races, I'm getting more and more confidence in myself, and also for the trainers and owners that are seeing me winning. So it just boosts my levels up, and know that I can win with these guys and get the job done.
You mentioned it earlier, your father, Robbie Davis. Folks my age certainly remember when Robbie was riding. How did that affect your coming into the game? When did you decide you want to be a jockey? And also, you're a local product, right? Do you get buddies over here watching you ride?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I grew up in Saratoga High School, graduated 2011, and to be able to have my father before I started racing, huge, you know. He taught me a lot and, again, put me on the right path with good trainers and good connections, and I'm here today.
You know? How soon did you know you wanted to be a jockey?
Very late. Senior year in high school.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I was 16, and everyone was deciding what they wanted to do for college, where they were going, and what they wanted to do. And there was a moment where I told Dad, I said, I'm not sure what I want to do. I was messing around with motocross and the dirt bikes, but I knew it was difficult to be professional in that. And it was right in front of me. My father was a jock. He told me one day, he said, just get on one of my ponies in the back. We'll put the pants on you, put the saddle on, the racing saddle on, see how you feel, see if you like it. And right then and there, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
And it's a family, too. Your sister Jackie, your sister Katie, spending a little time, cute pictures on social media,
yeah.
With her daughter, her and Trevor McCarthy. So she's not riding currently, but it's got to be fun when you get out on the racetrack with the siblings.
Yes, definitely. It's always competitive, but you know, it's nice that I have some siblings out there that are doing the same thing that I'm doing.
I like Jackie doing the throughway, the little Finger Lakes, little Myra.
Yeah, she's driving. She's working hard. She's doing well. She's first year at Finger Lakes, and she's fourth in the standings. She's doing well, and she's trying to mix in Saratoga and Belmont when she can ship in. And then she's looking at Aqueduct for the winter time, and I think she's going to have a great winter.
Nice. Yeah, I caught up with her the other day. She was in town. I said, hey, you want to come over? She said, I'm heading back to the Finger Lakes. I said,
well,
we'll get you on one of the trips.
Yeah.
Speaking of Aqueduct, just reflect on the last, 8-9 months or so. You win the Aqueduct winter meet. And then second, Aqueduct Spring. Yeah. And then, that last day at Belmont. You know, we were all kind of in there rooting and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it was a great Belmont meet as well.
Course,
so congratulations on, first of all, the past 9 months. But just reflect on really a great last, you know, three meets on the NYRA circuit.
Yeah, sure. So I won the winter title at Aqueduct. Maybe about 8 winters. It's a long meet. It's about 4 or 5 months. So it definitely means a lot. You know, I never take away from how prestigious the meets are. Winning is definitely tough at any track, but nice to get my first jockey title, winning title. And moving forward to the little spring meet for Aqueduct, I lost by 1, but that was okay. I'm having great momentum. And then again, lost by 1 to leading rider in the country, IRAD. So it was kind of funny.
Came
to
right
say.
Down to the last day.
To the last day. So. Going into that last week with maybe leading by 4 or 5 races, my agent, Mike Migliori, we were talking about it, and he says, whatever happens, you did your best, and say go out and win it, you know. So a funny thing to say was you have IRAD leading around the country trying to chase you down, so you got to feel good about yourself already.
Yeah.
But again, great, best Belmont meet I've ever had. I would have loved to win it, but you know, always looking to do better. And I congratulate IRAD on the title. And I said, don't worry. He said, next time I'll get you. So yeah. he liked that. We had a good laugh about it.
It was one win, but it put you front and center, certainly, because everybody was watching that battle down to the end. So it certainly raised your profile a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to ask a nuts and bolts question before we let you go. Whenever I get jockeys or trainers in here during the Saratoga meet, we have new people who kind of jump on board. I'm always curious, and it's fun to hear kind of what goes on behind the scenes. Obviously, a number of rides a day, you put down different silks for the owners.
Yes.
How does that work? Do you have a locker there, and are all your silks for the day lined up, or do you get the silks brought to you just before the race? How does that play out during the day?
We have the silks man, Ali. He'll set up all the races that for all the owners the day before. My valet will grab all my silks that I'm scheduled to ride, and he'll line them up. So I'll have all my silks in my corner, my bench or locker, all lined up from top to bottom, from my first ride to the last ride. And also getting my helmet set up and everything. So he tries to make it as easy as possible for me. All I have to think about is how to win my races, and then everything else is my man, David.
So. Perfect. And again, before we let you go, just want to ask once again how much fun it is to ride up in Saratoga. I ask everybody, trainers and jockeys, how much fun it is up at Saratoga in front of the fans and the knowledgeable fans, but it's got to be extra special being a hometown guy.
Oh, of course. You know, a graduate from Saratoga. Just, I feel like every year I come up here, it's even more special. You just realize how much of meaning the Saratoga race course is, the historic and everything, but I love the fans. I love the energy.
And we got a couple of pictures I took yesterday of signing the autographs and taking the pictures. That adds to the special.
Oh, I mean, it doesn't hurt to stop and say hello, because we need the fans. We need the bettors to keep the racing going, as well as the horses. But it doesn't hurt for 5 seconds to take a quick picture or an autograph, because it means a lot for them in the long run.
Yeah, especially the kids. It's always fun to see the kids out
chasing. Yeah, I love the smile, everything. Yeah. I do the best I can if I can give them some goggles or anything, but I love that. I love giving them the experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Robbie, appreciate the visit this morning. again, congratulations on the win yesterday, the stakes win over the weekend. Good luck going forward in the meet and going forward overall, because as I say, the last 9 months or so, you've been knocking it out of the park. So fun to see. Congratulations.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you.
Appreciate Robbie Davis, great. Before you go, you're a Saturday visitor. That means a gift card from Jacob and Anthony's. Go downtown and have a little dinner on us. And
thank you so much.
We appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you.
All right. We will take a break. When we come back, Bill Nader is in the house. We'll talk a little Hong Kong and more. Stay tuned.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Sent on their way. And the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come, stop shoving Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shoving Maria. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
To chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won at just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning, and thanks to Dylan Davis. People are yelling in my ear and everything. I said, Robbie, of course it's Dylan Davis. Hey, I get over 40 days, there's probably 120 guests. I slipped up a little bit. Of course I knew it was Dylan Davis, obviously. And I know now. We are happy to be joined by Bill Nader from the Hong Kong Jockey Club and more, formerly right here at NIRA, and I assume in town for a little bit, maybe over at the Round Table as well. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, and apologize on the dress code. When I did this show the last time, dress code was much less.
As far as guests, you were fitting right in. And if I could go with that, I would be with that. Believe me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here for the roundtable. It's a combination. I haven't been on a vacation for 3 years due to COVID. With travel restrictions in Hong Kong, getting back into the country is just too much. So this time, I did make the trip to see family and friends. And when you talk about family and friends, a lot of it is right here in Saratoga, especially on the friends side. So I came back for a combination of that and the roundtable, the Jockey Club dinner tonight, and then the roundtable tomorrow. And then I'll head back to Hong Kong straight after that, and then finally transition into the new role in California in October.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but let's talk a little bit about Hong Kong, because Hong Kong racing just, I think, has, as technology has allowed racing fans to watch more and more racing from around the world, people have realized Hong Kong. And I'd like you to just talk a little bit about it. I pulled up a couple of shots yesterday from Happy Valley and Sha Tin, and I look at the facilities and I look at the numbers and whatnot. And if I'm right, it's a couple days a week in a limited season, and the numbers are blockbuster. Talk about the two tracks and the numbers you put up, and just what it means to the culture over there as well.
Well, culturally, it's from the standpoint of sporting and entertainment, it's everything. Nothing else even compares.
Look at this bridge.
Yeah, that's now you're looking at Happy Valley, which is the CNN came out and gave the top 10 racetracks in the world. They put Happy Valley as number 5. That's Sha Tin. So the big races are run at Sha Tin, and Happy Valley is the Wednesday night track. Sha Tin is the Saturday or Sunday track. We run twice a week, as you mentioned, typically on Sunday. And look, it's a model that you can't duplicate. It's a not-for-profit. Hong Kong Jockey Club is the fifth biggest charity donor worldwide, and it all comes really from the racing side. The biggest single taxpayer in Hong Kong, because the volume in terms of wagering is just through the roof. Wagering, just to put it in perspective, on the final day of the season, which was 16th of July, was 258 million U.S. So it's staggering numbers. And the lottery, which we also operate on behalf of the government, does very, very little. So horse racing is the dominant player. Racing's twice a week. There's 88 race meetings a year, spanning from early September to mid-July. And then there's a shutdown. There were 37 days in the year in which you can simulcast races from overseas. That's pretty much it. There are 22 licensed trainers. All the horses are stabled at Sha Tin. The vertical integration of the Hong Kong Jockey Club model is straight up and down. We do the tote. We do the broadcasting. We do all the food and beverage. We do everything. The veterinarians have to be employees of the Jockey Club. The farriers need to be employees of the Jockey Club. All of the payroll of a trainer taken care of by the Jockey Club. The trainer doesn't have to worry about anything. To be an owner, you have to be a member of the Jockey Club. So it's very unique, but it's also very successful. And, you know, the 88 days of racing in Hong Kong will produce wagering of 17 billion U.S., whereas all of the racing in America is 11 billion U.S. So when you look at it on the scale of wagering, and I think that's one of the things that makes the content from a, as you mentioned, from a global perspective, so attractive, is that you have field sizes that average 12.5. You have a good, high-quality standard of racing. You have great liquidity in the pools. The pools are supersized. So, and you have great integrity. The integrity in, you know, the lab is right on the track at Sha Tin. It's one of the top three labs in the world. The rules are strictly enforced. So from all the four pillars, they're well positioned, and you know they'll continue to be successful for decades to come. And you know, when you look at it and how you try to replicate some of that here, it's different because the whole situation is different, and that you know, it's very old school. All the horses are stable there. There are only 12 races a year that are open to foreign competition. Otherwise, and 99% of the horses are geldings. There's no fillies. There's almost no colts. So from the standpoint of the customers, they get very familiar with these horses because they have pretty long careers. So it's different, and 90% of the races are on turf, 10% on dirt. So when you see a Sha Tin race day of 10 or 11 races, they're all going to be on the grass because it's once a week. So it's unique. If anybody is ever in that part of the world, I'll tell you, you got to go. You got to see it firsthand to believe it, because it's just incredible.
Yeah, I would love to go over, because, you know, just looking at the photos and whatnot. But the international races every year are literally international races. They are really highlights of the racing season on the calendar, you know, globally. And so a great job done there. And I'll also tout Hong Kong Jockey Club does a great, and in English as well. The website gives out so much information.
Yeah.
I think that's a model I think everybody could build on.
Yeah, the website sometimes is so much that it might be hard to navigate. So stay with it and keep punching away. When I went there in 2007, there wasn't a there weren't past performances in English. So we introduced that, and all of the video of every race is available free of charge. All the past performances are available free of charge, and we put them up 2 days before the race day. So Monday, you have all the information for Wednesday, and by Thursday night, you have all the information for whether it be Saturday or Sunday, including vet reports. So if there's anything with the horse's history, that's accessible.
Don't you also do the horse's weight?
We do the weight, but that's true in Asia. A lot of the, you know, Australia, Japan, Korea, they will publish the horse's weight, and that's good because we can do it, especially in Hong Kong, because again, it's a confined set of horses in one spot, and it's easy to manage. We also have Chung Fa, which was recently introduced. That's a second site where horses can be trained in China, and then they van down for the races. But we can do that quite easily. But shifts in weight, up or down, are worth noting.
Yeah. I thought that was a great kind of addition to the information out there potentially for handicappers. And speaking of that, you've talked about how unique it is, but are there things that maybe U.S. racing can learn and pull into their game as well?
Well, I think, look, you know, in terms of my role there, I was chairman of the Asian Pattern Committee, which is similar to the American Graded Stakes Committee, and also very involved with the IFHA. And what we look for through the IFHA, the international body, is more uniformity and harmonization. So I think if the sport together, domestically as well as globally, can come together and agree on, you know, best practices, you know, quality control standards, I think everyone will rise up, and it's, you got to find the common ground. But things like best practices and high standards are, you know, they can be modified a little bit to fit, you know, your specific set of circumstances. But it's something that we should all aspire to do. And if you just open your eyes and take a look, I think everybody can come away with a takeaway that, hey, maybe we can do this better. That's something that I think we can adopt and work with, and then you have a better experience for the customer.
Yeah, there's no doubt that looking around and kind of picking the best of everybody, I think, benefits everybody if we can kind of fold that in and benefit the trainers, the jockeys, the horse players, certainly. And as I say, I think Hong Kong does a lot of things right. As you mentioned, you're going to kind of wrap things up in Hong Kong coming up in October, moving on to the TOC. Talk a little bit about what's ahead for you.
Yeah, I'm going to take on the role as president and CEO of Thoroughbred Owners of California, which advocates for the owners and tries to create a better value proposition or a better experience for owners. When we had a board call yesterday, they were all at Del Mar. I was here at Saratoga and participated by Zoom. But, you know, Del Mar is off to a very good start this season. They're averaging 9.4 runners per race. Good field sizes again today. They won't be able to hold that throughout the entire season, but they're off to a very healthy start, and they're on, you know, a good path. So, you know, these are the kind of things I think we all need to look at. We got to look at, you know, the return to owners. And, you know, I've always said my belief is it can satisfy two stakeholders, horse owners, horse players. Then you're in a great spot. Then I think you got the nucleus to success, and everybody can benefit because it does trickle down from there. But you got to keep the horse players happy, and, you know, make sure that the sporting and the entertainment experience is as good as it can possibly be. Saratoga does a good job of it, and when you walk around here, I mean, there are you know, racing in other jurisdictions overseas, whether it be Europe or Asia, that could even learn from Saratoga. We can all learn from each other, but the keys are, you know, really getting quality racing, good field sizes, and make the whole racing and wagering experience as good as it can be. And when you look around Saratoga and you see the buzz and, you know, even the bandstand, which I really like, you know, outside the administrative offices and things like that, it just kind of give extra flavor to the day. But certainly Del Mar is a very special place. Santa Anita, just a, you know, a beautiful racetrack. So California has a lot of things going for it. It has great weather, great racetracks, great venues, and now they're starting to get the field sizes up. So we'll continue to work with the racetracks on behalf of the TOC and all of the other bodies that, you know, CHRB and others that get involved in California, try to bring everybody together and try to raise the level and make it better for everybody. If it gets better for the owners, it's better for the trainers, jockeys, better for the racing fans, it's a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, and I think still today, New York, California were kind of the pinnacle, Kentucky right in there as well, obviously, and I think a healthy jurisdiction or jurisdictions in all of those areas makes for a healthy game. So certainly rooting for California. It's been great to see what Del Mar has done at the meet. And speaking of New York, you spent a long time right here at NYRA, 94-207 with the New York Racing Association. What are your memories, and how do you compare and contrast Saratoga back then with what it's become here in 2022?
Well, I was only here yesterday, but just walking around, it looks great, and you know, and it's just a special place. I mean, It looked familiar to me. I mean, there's some changes, but it's just a great place, and just so many great memories here. I mean, we always look forward, not just me, my entire family, to coming up every summer, and I'm sure that's a familiar theme for a lot of people, right? Everybody loves coming to Saratoga, and, you know, the two-year-olds, I think, are always so great to watch because you're looking for the stars of tomorrow. But then, you know, just the day-to-day racing as well as the high-level racing. You know, the fields in the Saratoga Special and the four-star Dave are small today, but there's great quality there, and they're very interesting races. And, you know, they give us a glimpse, especially the Special, to see how good these two-year-olds, the two in particular, that'll command the market today, and where they go, whether they go to the Hopeful or, you know, on the way to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So, and then on to next year as three-year-olds. So it's that's Saratoga. It's fun to be here. The quality and the, you know, the intense competition, whether you're a jockey or a trainer or an owner or a racehorse, it's always,
or a handicapper,
it's always an interesting puzzle, and very competitive, but that's what makes it great, and that's what we want as racing fans or people who love the sport. And so it's always a great place to be. And you know, the sale the other, you know, the last couple of days, we try to buy a horse for the Hong Kong Jockey Club. We're buying horses at Arcana in Deauville over the next couple of days. We bid on a horse here, and we sell it in our sale. We pre-train them and then sell them as two-year-olds or three-year-olds to our members. But we got outbid. It was we were only on one, and we didn't get it. But we'll be at Keeneland. We buy at sales in Australia, New Zealand, France, the UK, Ireland, and also America, as well as South Africa. So it's an international sale, and that's always fun. So I was doing that homework this morning before coming over here about which horses we're going to be on in Deauville. So, yeah, it's the game has become, or the sport has become so much more international.
Yeah.
And when you talk about simulcasting, now even in Hong Kong, even though the wagering is so great, 20% of that is now coming from overseas. And, you know, great racing and great content will always find its way into, you know, people who appreciate that.
Well, you and I are the same age, so we both remember the days where just getting an advanced edition for Saratoga and getting the ink on your hands, that was a technical innovation.
Yeah.
To have the racing form the day before. Now you get it online, you can watch all the replays. It's a new world now with the technology.
Well, I started, the racing form was delivered the morning of, and that's when we did the morning line, called it into the printer at 8:30 in the morning, and the programs are delivered at 11 o'clock. So, yeah, it's come a long way with scratch time and everything like that. But I go back to Affirmed and Alidar, where now when I'm thinking about the TOC, I was an Alidar guy, and I learned to respect Affirmed the hard way. But all the great horses that have come out of California, and now to make this transition, well, from New York to Hong Kong, now to California, it's it's a wild ride. But now in California, when you think about it, in the way, and D-Wayne Lucas was the guy that changed it. D-Wayne on the plane, bringing horses into New York from California and winning big races. But now, a healthy California will still benefit New York because you want those big names. You want those big names coming in, and it adds a special flavor to the racing, not only here, but in Belmont as well.
No, I agree. We want the health of the industry across the country. That's good for everybody. And it was funny, I had Wayne Lucas in yesterday, and I had him relate the story because I did some research on him, having horses around the country. He had a satellite dish before those were things. He said he went out and got a 20-foot satellite dish and put it up so he could watch races from around the country. And before you go, I want to go back to before the Naira days. I pulled up a shot that people can pull up. Just remember the early portion of your career. I only made one visit to Rockingham. It was years ago. A buddy of mine out of high school, he was getting married shortly after he got out of college, and he moved to New Hampshire. So he had his bachelor party at Rockingham. Oh. So I made one visit to Rockingham.
Yeah.
But you spent a lot of time there, not just starting your career, but as a kid, as I understand it.
Yeah, I would ride my bicycle there in the summer. That was my summer job when I was a teenager. That's the new Rockingham. The old Rockingham was destroyed in a fire in 1980. And the new Rockingham that you see here was built in 1984, and then it reopened. So for 4 years, it was shut down. But Rockingham, if you go back to 64 to 67, before my time, had the richest three-year-old race in the country, richer than the Derby, the Preakness, or the Belmont, the New Hampshire Sweepstakes. And it was won by Dr. Fager, and it was run by Roman Brother, who both went on to be, of course, Horse of the Year.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a little track in New Hampshire, New England packed a pretty big punch, and there's a lot of New Englanders that have gone on to do well, and it's sad to see that there's no racing there anymore, but yeah, it was a great place, and it was known as the Saratoga of New England.
Yeah, no, I was lucky enough to make one visit, so that's indelibly etched in my memory, because I certainly enjoyed it. As you say, there were some big-time races there and whatnot. And I also, before they wrapped up the fairs in Massachusetts, I saw Zippy Chippy's last race in Northampton.
Yeah, there you go.
That career loss number 100
there. Yeah, yeah. It's, well, I mean, it was one horse I can't remember, trained by Carlos Figueroa, that won five races in the span of 6 days. So some crazy stories that come out of there.
No, New England was very prominent and certainly good memories. Bill, again, happy to have you jump in, talk a little Hong Kong and memories of up here. Wish you good luck going forward with the TOC. And as I say, really appreciate the visit. And again, as a Saturday visitor on Racing Across America, enjoy a little dinner at Jacob and Anthony's on us, and enjoy your time in Saratoga.
Great to be with you, and great to be back in Saratoga.
Happy to have you on board. Bill Nader, again, Hong Kong Jockey Club, on his way to Thoroughbred Owners of California. That'll wrap it up for Racing Across America for this Saturday morning. Great afternoon of racing ahead. Four-star Dave, Saratoga special, and a great card overall. So enjoy that. Come on up to the track or swing by the race book down in Albany, or fire up your Capital OTV bet and play from your living room and watch us here on the network this afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow with more here on the network at 9 a.m. for the handicapper support, 10 a.m. for racing, or 10 a.m. for Loose on the Lead. It's Sunday, so Steve Bick and I, Loose on the Lead tomorrow at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on!
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops.
My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.